Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from Washington and I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening we'll talk about the role of the military in African politics. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa Field Group. Vincent, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very much welcome. And also joining us is regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's joining us from Durban, South Africa, as usual. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. They said tonight we're talking about the new role of the military in African politics. There was a time in the late 60s and early 70s when military coups were common and acceptable. The principle then under the OAU was that the non-interference, so-called non-interference in other nations' affairs. But in the second wave of democracy, coups were condemned and even discouraged. Lately, military coups have taken on a different shade. We've seen coups in Egypt, in Zimbabwe, in Sudan, recently in Mali. So let me start with Vincent here. And Vincent, what do you make of this new trend?
You know, it is so disquieting to see that things that were supposed to be of the bygone years are again rearing their heads into our time, the 21st century. It was, of course, characteristic of the continent to hear of coups every other year, every other few months. So what is happening, I think, is that some of those countries seem to never have moved forward while it was thought that they had made progress over the many, many, many years of leadership. Then there was, I think when you look at some of those countries closely, they all have a history of having the military, having been involved in the political system behind the scenes. They never fully separated the military from civilian rule. And that's why, you know, when you see, when, like, for example, you go to Zimbabwe case, when the military, quote-unquote, said they are overthrowing the government, basically it was Mnangagwa who was behind it because he had been disgruntled. And he decided he's going to get into power through the military that he had had a very close affinity with, that he had essentially been leading as a minister of defense over the years in the past. So there had been the military behind the political system in Zimbabwe, for example. And so when he came into power, essentially the military came back into power. And I'm seeing that. I saw that, for example, in you look at Egypt, for example. The most powerful people in Egypt are the military generals. The military has always been part of the political system. And so the fact that you can see in Mali the military taking over power and handing and appointing not a civilian, but they say a civilian who is a general, a person who was in the military in the past, and the deputy or the vice president becomes a military person, tells you that the military has always been behind the scenes controlling the systems in Mali. So I feel that there has been, when you look at some of these countries, those countries have always had the military somehow involved, and therefore they see themselves as an alternative, which has been very common in mostly in West Africa, more than in East and Southern Africa, I mean, apart from Uganda and Rwanda. And as Mula has pointed out in some other discussion, even in Uganda and Rwanda, those were really not military, but rather militias.
Yeah.
But if you look at countries like Kenya, for example, however the politics, you know, chaotic things were, the military was never anywhere close to trying to get onto power. They never. And why? It is because somehow it was the system that made it a clear demarcation that the military's role was to protect the country from external threats and never to be involved in the political systems or running of a country internally.
I see. Suleiman, what do you make of this new trend?
The new trend, actually, in short, it is an indictment to our political system. It is a clear testimony that we have not made progress in the political management of our country. Ideally, as Vincent has said, soldiers are not trained to govern. Soldiers are not political scientists. Political science is not part of their curriculum. What they are trained in is to defend the country against external aggression, to intervene, to maintain peace if it goes out of hand for the internal policemen. But ideally, they should not go near running a government. Most absurd is that they do not understand the statecraft, yet they take over the power to do what with it. No one knows it. That is why it is leading to chaos. So as Vincent has said, it is a new development, but it is an indictment to our political leaders to show them that they have not done their job well. That is why the soldiers are being forced into government. Actually, if you scrutinize many of the recent takeover, they are not even coups by the soldiers themselves from the barracks. These are coups against civilian coups. After the people have overthrown the government, after there is a political instability, after there is a political impasse, they just come in. That is what happened in Zimbabwe. Time came when there were internal disagreement within the ruling elites. They disagreed within themselves to the extent that they were paralyzing the country. Then the military only came in to stabilize, or to it took it as an excuse because there was a paralysis in the country. The same in Mali, where they have just taken over. There were demonstrations and demonstrations and demonstrations until almost the country was ungovernable. In that state of paralysis, they came in and took over. The same in Sudan. Demonstrations and in essence, in Sudan, in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Egypt, the people themselves overthrow the system, but only lacked the masses weaken the system to the extent that it cannot function. And since the soldier remain as the only standing well-organized institution, they come in and take over. After taking over, they take advantage of that, and then they want to stay forever, which is wrong, which we have to condemn, which we have to bring to their attention, that they are going into a territory which they are not meant to be in.
I see. Vincent, I'll throw this one to both of you, beginning with Vincent. What do you make of those who say these soldiers or these military coups are enabled, groomed, empowered by the political leaders themselves, by using them when power to crush every other opposition, and in so doing, they make them so powerful?
It goes back to the point I was making, that if you look at most of those countries, the political system, the politicians have worked with the military in some way, and therefore given the military a sense of power, a sense of how things look like if you were to run the country. And over time, they start observing, and when they see that the citizenry is disgruntled, is unhappy with the civilian leadership, the military realize, well, this is so easy. We can make the citizens happy by taking over the power. Because after all, we've been working with these guys. This guy has been using us. But we have the guns. We have the means to kick him out. And because at the end of the day, if it's about power, they have the power. And so the civilian political leadership that has no confidence in civilian institutions and always uses the military to crush the opposition gives the military a sense of power and how easy it would be for them to take over. In fact, in some way, they give them the desire to take over the country. They give them the appetite to become, political leaders of their country. And so if they had allowed the civilian institutions to become the sole governing tools of a country, if they did not use the opposition, or rather the military, to crush their opponents, if they did not bring the military into the streets of a country, the military would not even think about taking over. And you've seen this in all those countries. The military has been seen on the streets crushing opposition supporters. The military has been brought out of the barracks to arrest and sometimes participate in the killing of opponents. Yeah, but in any country where the militaries have been maintained for whatever they were, what they are really meant to be, as the protectors of a nation against external threats, the militaries don't even consider being part of the civilian leadership. And so you have to blame poor leadership. You have to blame the leaders that have used the militaries to oppress them, to crush their opponents, for actually having given the military a good excuse to take over. Because it's just a matter of time that they realize, perhaps the solution to all this disgruntled citizens' requests is to just take over power. And it's so easy. It's just so easy, because at the end of the day, these civilians rely on us to stay in power. And if they rely on us to stay in power, and we feel that they're incompetent and the citizens don't want them, we can as well take over.
Suleiman?
Douglas, see, there is a crop of leadership in Africa which is so nauseating. A leadership that has bastardized the concept of leadership. Ideally, leadership, one should have power flowing from the people, not from force. The concept of leadership demands that you are a leader on behalf of your people. You go in to serve them for their benefit. The moment you change that concept and you go in to serve yourself, to become a con man, you become corrupt openly. And when they try to talk to you, when the opposition try to talk to you, when you people rise up to try to demand cleaner leadership, you unleash or you call on the soldiers to help you to stay in power. Then you have bastardized politics. You have cheapened leadership. You have made leadership look so hopeless, so cheap. You have made leadership look as if it is just a question, it is a business. Otherwise, if they do not, as you have said, that is why some people, as you have said, they groom them, because they create conditions for the soldiers to see that these people are useless. Instead of serving the people, he's getting money from the bank, he's getting money from the central bank, he's buying property abroad. He's doing this, he's giving his brother, he's appointing his wife a minister, he's appointing his brother a minister, he's giving his cousin the biggest tender in government. I mean, once these African leaders have gone that cheap, once they have gone that primitive, they have made the soldiers to feel, as Vincent has said, that they are better than them. Otherwise, ideally, Douglas, it is very shameful, and it is not called for in any way to make a soldier to lead a country, because making a soldier to lead a country is like picking someone from the barracks and you go and tell him to be the head of Microsoft, the head of Google, the head of Mercantile Bank, the head of Standard Bank from the barracks. What is he going to do there? A government is even more than a central bank of a country. You cannot pick a colonel from the barracks and tell him, now you are being appointed to be a central bank governor. If you cannot do it, then how can you make a colonel or a brigadier from the army to make him a president of a country? That is bastardizing politics and bastardizing leadership. These are gunmen. These are specialized killing machines. They are supposed to be in the barracks only to be pulled out when there is necessity. These are killing animals. They are not supposed to be taken in state house. That is why in the countries where the militias like the M7, like the Kagame, like the Sergeant Doe, like the Dalai Kamala, like the Debi, they are just killing ever since they started leading until when they have been overthrown from power. Because for them, they are specialized in killing. They know nothing about governing. Is Uganda progressing? It is not. What does the gunman Museveni who took over Uganda, what does he do? What does he know? Is Southern Sudan progressing? No. Did Omar Bashir take Sudan far? No. Why? Because they are soldiers meant for the barracks. So we should not create conditions. It is the politicians who have created the conditions for them. Otherwise, even them, they should know that they belong to the barracks.
See. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from Washington. Tonight we are talking about the new role of the military in African politics. My panelists are Vincent Makori, managing editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. Gentlemen, how do you explain the muted condemnation or the more or less letting these people go with this? We remember when Al-Sisi took over, the condemnation was muted. Whatever has happened, there's not that serious condemnation, especially from the international community, not even from neighbors, Vincent.
First, from neighbors, you have to realize if you live in a glass house, you don't, as they say, don't throw stones. So some of these have so many issues in their own countries that they don't want to be seen to be condemning what's happening in the neighboring country. And that has been almost like a pact among African leaders. And even when they do it at the UN level, at Africa Union level, they have tried to do it through some of the Africa Union organs. But it's a very muted. Well, because at the end of the day, they know that their own countries they don't have a moral authority given how they're running their own countries. Very few African leaders have that moral authority. But even when they have a moral authority, they have this camaraderie thing about them. They have this brotherhood. They have formed a club where they are determined to kind of watch each other's backs. They don't want to appear to be attacking their friend. And these friendships are not helping the citizens of Africa. I'm never surprised. I'm never surprised. And I just wanted to add a little bit to what my brother Mahula was saying in terms of why the military is easily, may consider taking over in some of these countries is because the civilian leadership in their failure to show that civilian leadership is more sophisticated than power.
Yeah.
I've made it look like all you need is power. You can just silence your enemy, silence your opponent. And that is all you need. And once you give them that idea, then, of course, the soldiers feel like, so we have the means. Why can't we just take over if that is all it takes? It is like if you're a CEO of a company and you have shareholders, and every time you're having deliberations and anybody challenges you, you just go to the main entrance and you call the security guard and you tell them to come in and club all these people and silence them. After some time, the idea will be planted in the person at the main entrance that all you need in order to run this company is maybe clubs and other things. Just silence the people and take over. So that is the problems we're having. And so in terms of the response, I never expect much from the African leadership because none of them has the confidence to speak loudly about the bad things that are happening in the neighboring countries. So they watch over, they watch each other's back, and the losers are the citizens of these countries.
Suleiman.
As Vincent has said, a few good ones, a few courageous ones have spoken, but the very few, as Vincent has said, have had the courage to comment because they don't have the moral authority themselves. Secondly, there is the facade about the AU declaration about the refusal to recognize any coup that has taken place. Many of these countries hide under that clause, that so long as after the coup, the AU comes out and say it does not recognize that particular military government, then the whole continent is covered under that umbrella of the AU. Whereas actually, this, if we needed, the situation needed individual countries to come out openly, to condemn and to make it uncomfortable for them to continue taking power. So that is the clause. And above all, what has made it worse is even that clause itself has been overtaken by time. It doesn't make sense anymore not to recognize. If the AU was more proactive, it should have come out with more, with better guidelines, because now we have got situations where the population itself makes a referendum on a leader, like in Mali. They just say, no, you are corrupt, no, you have abused the constitution, we don't want you anymore. And then there is a paralysis. In Egypt, there is a paralysis. In Burkina Faso, there is a paralysis. And then there is no institution whatsoever. Sometimes they are just taking a chance. If the AU was more understanding, if it was more proactive, it was supposed to build more guidelines now. For example, to insist once the soldiers intervene on behalf of the people, there has to be a transition. The transition head has to be a politician or someone who is a retired diplomat for such a number of years or such a period, and then after that, preparing the country for. So they needed a new guideline, not a blanket saying that there is not going to be recognition. As far as the international community is concerned, unfortunately, at this point in time, we have a problem. In America, which was one of the developed countries, which many developed countries were relying on to rein in to these people like soldiers, unfortunately, the Trump administration has not been so proactive as far as African affairs are concerned. I wonder whether even many African countries know even who is the Secretary for African Affairs in the Trump administration. As far as Europe is concerned, also we have a problem because Brexit disorganized the whole structure within the European Union. Now it is only France which is a bit active. That is why you find it is France which is trying to intervene in Mali, which is trying to intervene in Ivory Coast. It is the only active country, maybe because the leader is still young and is so much pro-Africa, maybe. But the others, it has the continents, both the American continent and the European continent, they have got their problem. That is why even the soldiers are taking advantage of the situation.
I see.
I also think in terms of the international community's response, there comes a point of fatigue. You know, when you see things happening like military coup in the 21st century, sometimes you don't even know what to say. And you know, for these countries, they also have their own issues. But then they look at that and what are you going to say? It is so unbelievable that this should be happening now. And of course, it's an indictment of the leadership, the civilian leadership, such that the military should see the need and necessity to take over power. So I think for the international community, I can't even blame the international community. It's like, why should anybody even be thinking of a military coup in Africa? Why should countries come to that point where the military sees the need to take over? For me, it's also just a sign of fatigue. The rest of the world is kind of tired of having to come to the rescue of the continent or having to condemn the same things over and over for decades and decades. It's like the continent needs to get to a point where you make progress. And when you make that progress, keep moving forward. You can make some progress, and then 10 years later, you're coming back to the same issues that you used to talk about 20 years ago. It's just a shame.
Then in that sense, Vincent, do you see more of these type of causes taking place on the continent?
You know, I feel like in certain countries, we can expect them. I don't think it is more of them, but there are some situations where you feel uncertainty about the future. You fear, for example, for any of these countries where the leadership has insisted on staying forever. Well, we don't know what is the future of Uganda. What is the future of Rwanda? What might be the future of South Sudan? What might be the future of Ivory Coast? Any place where they have refused to allow for easy and peaceful transition of power, there is a possibility of a military coup. Whoever saw the coup that happened in Sudan? And that, as Mahula pointed out, the coups might actually come as an instigation by the civilians. When civilians get fed up, those guys in the military may decide to take over power.
Suleiman, in 30 seconds.
I agree with Vincent that is a certain form of fatigue or cynicism from the developed countries, because the developed countries don't understand Africa in many ways at this present day. A country like Uganda, the international country doesn't understand the people of Uganda, because we have got a militia led by Museveni. He's not a politician. He had no political program, no economic program, but just a mere militia. It overruns the government, political government in power, or the military, whatever was there. It takes over power. It holds people by the gun. It enters the district. It massacres people. There is a police. But it doesn't understand. He subverts the constitution. Then at the end of the day, he sees professors coming up and saying, this is the best leader we have had. He has just massacred hundreds of people. But well-educated people. He subverts the election system, he subverts the constitution, and then you see well-educated people forming political parties to enter into an election which he has organized himself, which is going to win himself and remain in power. He holds people at gunpoint. So the international community has become confused about Africa. In some of these countries, there is a cynicism. They just don't understand the people, especially the educated people. Because there are countries really where the soldiers go in power, but the country goes on its it demonstrates the country refuses that leader. But you don't understand in some country what leads to people to be held at gunpoint, well educated, they have the brains, but they continue going down. They continue kneeling after the gunmen. So I think there is also a fatigue from the international community as whether the coups will happen. Yes, the coups are going to happen, but the coups which are happening are by the people, not by the soldiers. The soldiers are only going to take over from what the people have done, because the people are getting more and more fed up with the gun rule, which is prevailing on the continent now in many countries.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macori, Managing Editor, VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, a pleasure having you on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. Just go to our main website and click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.